This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, it's Friday, people. We're almost there. Welcome to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And I don't know about you, Steve, but I'm just about ready to build an ark. I mean, if we get any more rain this week, holy moly, man. Like, it just... And last night, I had to get up in the middle of the night because my Bills flag out on the front of my house is waving around in the wind, and it's going to snap off.
I know.
I had to go down and grab it in my jockey shorts, bring it inside, and it's freezing out there.
So you didn't even, like, put on the obligatory bathrobe to go out to the end of your flip-flops?
I'm really not a bathrobe guy. Not a big bathrobe guy. The reason why is I'm always hot at night.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if I sleep in more than a T-shirt, I'm sweating bucket of water.
I'm totally with you. I'll say this, though. Here's my thing. And I know this is probably TMI.
Let her rip. It's Friday.
Once in a while, not all the time, just once in a while.
Yeah.
I swear to you, I'm in my pajamas at 5 o'clock. So
5 o'clock?
So not all of it, just once
calling
in a while.
Calling it a night just at five?
On a day, one of those days, you know, where it's like cruddy out. You're not going to get anything done outside.
I'm
and it's dark, right?
Anywhere.
It's dark, right? And it's like, and it feels like it's already. So. You got, and I'm like, you know, why put off the inevitable? So, and I'm gonna watch a movie or something. I mean, the game, like the Sabres are coming on, like, and we haven't eaten, yeah, you know, we haven't eaten dinner yet. I'm like,
last call at
let's
the Tasker house is 4:45.
Put the pajamas on, eat some supper, watch the Sabres, go to bed, boom.
My God, it's like Little House on the Prairie,
right? And that I will admit
that. Do you have a nightcap?
Huh?
Do you have a nightcap, too?
Yeah, no. Good call, though. No, but I'll say my nightcap is actually once in a while. If I'm cold, I put the toque on.
Oh,
I'll be in.
To bed?
No, not to bed.
Oh, yeah.
Watching the Sabres game, though. I have a Sabres toque
on.
A Bills, you know, stocking cap on. But not all the time. You know, I'm not all the time. I'm not that I'm not there yet. I'm not my dad yet. Like, my dad,
5 o'clock in the PJs
I'm
is taking a big step towards it, though.
I'm pretty sure my mom and dad, they're 92, the two of them. I'm pretty sure there are days when they don't get out of their pajamas. I'm not at that point yet.
That's got to be though, every once in a while. Like, hey, I got no particular place to be.
Right?
I'm just staying in the PJs.
It is. I will say this. It does feel really good when you can get it done. When it, you know, just say, you know what? I'm pulling the ripcord on this day. I'm going to just, I am going to slide over, get the dog up there with me. He has his spot where he lays right next to me on the mat. Let's just, you know, and the only thing that's going to move is my thumb.
That is.
On the remote. That is it. It doesn't happen very often because we do lead busy lives, and maybe that's why I kind of, you know, cherish those evenings a little bit more than I should. But man, oh man, I'm telling you, once in a while when I get the minute, I'm so done, especially in this time of year when it's dark at
light deprived, 4:30. No sunshine.
You know,
just get me
to tomorrow kind of thing. You know,
yeah, the ground is so saturated. My sump pump's going off every 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean
I'm glad it's working, but
right,
I'm just like,
it's bad.
Jeepers.
I did spend some time outside yesterday kind of evaluating the yard, you know.
Evaluating the yard.
Because I'm a guy, I've got a, you know, I got a big yard with some woods. And I, you know, now at this time, after everything's been saturated and had 60,000 pounds of snow on it, and then that melted and it's all squished, you get a really different feel about what your property looks like. In woods and brushed areas and stuff like that. Oh my, and you're like going, I need to cut that up and I need to get that out.
I need to dig this here.
And I'll say this too. Do you have water management? I dig ditches all over my yard because I got to drain water.
We have a sewer easement that goes behind my yard because our backyard butts up to other people's backyards on the other side. And running down the middle of it is a sewer easement that they put in like 20 years ago because it looked like a raging river in the spring.
Right.
So the town had to come in and take care of that. So we have like sewer grates between our backyards. Thank God, because I don't know what it would look like without it.
I don't have that, but I do have a pond.
which I can drain, you know, everything kind of sooner or later drains into, but sometimes it meanders before it gets down there, you know, so I don't want it, the water meandering in my backyard. I kind of like it to, so I keep track of all that stuff, you know.
Trying to channel it.
Yeah, and, you know, so I got some of that to think about.
You're not looking forward to the spring now.
Yeah, I don't have the energy I did.
You'd rather be in your PJs.
I'd rather be in my pajamas at 5 o'clock.
That's outstanding.
Unless, you know, people can relate, man. You get up here and it turns dark at 4:45.
The days are getting longer.
Yeah, they are getting longer. And I can kind of feel
it's
it
now. It's
not
dark at 5 anymore.
That's
right. It's almost dusk.
That's right. And you feel that. That's awesome. That's an awesome feeling, particularly when you wake up one morning and it's really bright out.
That wasn't today.
And yeah, well, it's not today. It was, I was like, really serious? Did you have snow at your place?
We had snow flakes, but nothing accumulated.
Ground looked like powdered sugar. It was, you could see kind of through it, but we had powdered sugar. Yeah. It was, and you know, now that's gone too because it warmed up. It's gone. But
I was driving back from the gym at 7:30. It still wasn't light. It was so dang overcast. I was like, is the sun even coming up today?
We got 15 minutes of sunshine yesterday, and it felt like, you know, a week at the beach.
Hurry up, run out, get your vitamin D.
Right? It felt like a week at the beach, that 10 minutes we got. It's so bad.
It's not good.
I don't know. I'm not one of those political, you know, science, weather change, global warning kind of guys. But the lake ain't frozen yet.
I know.
I saw somebody put on social, they had a satellite picture of Lake Erie, and it's like aqua green.
Yeah, there's no frozen, nothing's frozen over.
Not like nothing.
Yeah.
Like not even.
Which means we're probably going to get slammed at least two more times.
Yeah, nobody even threw a cup of crushed ice on it. It's
ice,
like
no
nothing.
Ice cubes.
Yeah.
It's Lake Erie straight up.
Right. I'll have it neat. Thank you.
Exactly. Lake Erie neat. Won't be so neat when we get blasted again in February or March.
We may. I'm thinking like, too, this is going to be one of those where winter's like, oh, yeah, is it going to be good? Yeah. So it's like mid-March, and all of a sudden we're going to get that last little 35-inch kiss goodbye. Yeah,
get pounded.
Yeah.
We do want to move on. We got plenty to discuss regarding Bills-Bengals on Sunday, divisional playoff of great magnitude, shall we say. I would call it the game of the week by far.
I mean, for our listeners, it is the game.
Well, no, but I mean, even league-wide, people are talking about this one more than any other. And it's chiefly because, you know, even that Niners-Cowboys matchup, which obviously has a lot of history dating back to the 90s, it's Brock Purdy, you know, that, like, it doesn't have quite the sizzle. Although he has played well to his credit.
There's no star power in some of the other games. I mean, Daniel Jones is just okay. And Jalen Hurts, I don't think anybody outside of Philly is kind of like on that train yet, you know?
Yeah.
Although they've had a phenomenal season. Some of the other games, and Dak Prescott has some cachet because it's the Cowboys.
Right. But they haven't won a playoff game in a while.
Joe versus Josh is all you got to say.
Since last week.
Joe versus Josh is, people know. That one's good. They want to see these guys. Plus, with the game 3 weeks ago that didn't happen, a huge amount of interest in this game.
Yeah. Speaking of that, this news just crossed an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
DeMar Hamlin was named by the NFLPA as the Week 18 NFLPA Community MVP, and they will donate $10,000 to his Chasing M's Foundation. They tweeted that news out, and it read as follows: a fighter, devoted family member, and friend, DeMar Hamlin's impacted hundreds of kids in his hometown of Pittsburgh through his Chasing M's Foundation. So, nice move by the NFLPA there. So that was nice to see. Bills on the practice field, indoors again, once again, because of all the dang rain we've had. So they're practicing inside. There is more news out of Bengals practice than there is Bills practice, at least for right now. The reason why is because head coach Zach Taylor has officially ruled out left tackle Jonah Williams and right guard Alex Kappa. And this is really not surprising. Neither of these two players practiced at all this week. They were both labeled week to week with their respective injuries. So neither of those players will suit up on Sunday for Cincinnati, which means over the last 3 weeks, the Bengals have lost three starting offensive linemen. The first was Lyle Collins, who went down with a season-ending knee injury, and the Bills were going to be the first game in which Hakeem Adeniji started at right tackle for Cincinnati, and then, as we know, the game only lasted half a quarter before DeMar Hamlin had his cardiac event and the game was canceled. The following week, they lose Alex Kappa. He didn't even play last week. He's not going to play this week. And then in last Sunday night's game, Jonah Williams goes down with the dislocated kneecap, and he is now not going to play. As for their replacement, Steve, it's anticipated that Jackson Carman, who I believe is a third-year player, is going to start at left tackle. You've got Max Sharping, who has about 30 starts in the league, all of them with Houston, where he spent the last three seasons. He's going to start at right guard in place of Kappa again this week. And Adeniji is now going to be into his fourth start
right
at right tackle, and that's how they're going to go.
Sure. Before this happened, Sharping's going to go in for Kappa again. Carman was actually listed as a backup guard, and Deontay Smith was the swing tackle. But when push came to shove, it was Carman who went in at right tackle, not Deontay Smith. We talked about this, Brownie. When the injuries happen during game, it's much more difficult to have a plan and to execute it real well when it happens during a game, because it's here we go. And all the game plan they've been doing, they kind of want to keep it going the way they had been, particularly in that Baltimore game when they were moving the ball really well and playing well. That all stopped when they had the injury to Jonah Williams, and the ripple effect was obvious. They really struggled from that point on against a Baltimore defense. Now, with a week to prepare, they would probably expect a lot more success given the fact that they've had a chance to get their mind around what's going to happen and they got their rotation down and some reps under their belt. All of that stuff. But certainly they're not 100% on the offensive line. They got, you know, three guys over the last month have dropped out. And they're going to – I think the first place it'll show probably is in their ability to run the football rather than throw it.
Which has been a problem even when they were healthy.
So I think they're all over that. They'll know what their limitations are, and they're going to have a plan to take, you know, to be productive. But, yeah, there's no question. This is rough spot for Cincinnati, a rough spot. Three offensive linemen go down in a month, and now you're –
Yeah, and I mean, I think they were 28th in rushing all season, so running the football has been an issue for them. They depend on Joe Burrow's arm even more than the Bills depend on Josh Allen's. Maybe the only exception, the only one that has Burrow beat might be Mahomes and Tom Brady this year, because Tampa didn't even try to run the football, and Kansas City has a passing interest in running the ball. So, I mean, he's not alone, but in this matchup, if the Bills can somehow find a way to make Cincinnati's passing game inconsistent, Cincinnati could be in trouble here offensively.
If they can't run the football on any down, unless they go 100%, they're going to be in a third and long, second and long, or, you know, second and medium anyway. Anytime they go throw with an incompletion on first or second down, it's, you know, and certainly they better not go two incompletions in a row. So, yeah, it puts a lot of pressure on Burrow. Now, he's Joe Cool. He's up to it. But it does make their margin of error small or smaller. So, yeah, I'm sure they think and they believe, and rightfully so, that they come in here and play well, and everybody on the front line and all that play it the way they have played their best, they're going to be fine. They're going to feel like they can come in and beat the Bills. And certainly the Bills aren't going to say, oh, whew, we got this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the Cincinnati Bengals, right? It's the AFC champions from a year ago, so they're going to have it turned up as well. I think this is going to be a fantastic game. I think it's going to be a one-possession game. The way the Bills have played, if the Bills don't turn it over and they play their best, I don't know how – it'll be difficult to keep up with them.
But that goes for the Cincinnati Bengals, too. If they come out with those three guys on the outside and start winging it around, like they did in the first 10 minutes of the game last time these two teams met, yeah, they're hard to keep up with as well.
Time to go around the NFL, which is brought to you. Hold on, I got it right here. Around the NFL brought to you by Kalida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. And I don't know if you saw this, Steve, but the Colts have now interviewed 12 head coaching candidates. The latest is Packers special teams coach Rich Bisaccia, who was the interim Raiders head coach last year at the end of the season and then did not get that head coaching job, moved on to Green Bay. 12 head coaching candidates. That's what reporters like to call casting a wide net. 12!
I'm telling you, and I'm telling you right now, Brownie, there's a number of guys out there that will no thank you that job.
Oh, you're going to like this then. Speaking of no thank you, Steve, the New York Jets put in a request to interview Browns offensive line coach Bill Callahan for their offensive coordinator job. This according to NFL Network's Mike Garofolo. Callahan signed an extension to stay in Cleveland with Deshaun Watson.
Rather than have a head coaching chance at the
an OC job.
An OC job with the Jets.
He's going to stay a line coach in Cleveland rather than take the OC job in New York. Woody Johnson wanted to get rid of Mike LaFleur. Now he's finding very quickly finding someone interested in the OC job for the Jets might be harder than initially thought.
I don't know what the extension was for Callahan, and maybe it's a good buck.
And he's a good line coach. I mean, been a veteran line coach for a long time.
He's been a coordinator at other places, and he wasn't he Callahan wasn't he was a head coach of the Raiders for a minute. Is it a little embarrassing for the Jets?
I don't know if anything is embarrassing for the Jets because the bar has gone pretty low over the years.
Yeah, I get it. But I'm still, at this point, it's like,
but
wow.
But egg on your face a little
Think
bit,
about
maybe?
This. They were, even you and me, we were talking them up last offseason.
I said I thought they could win 7 games.
Yeah.
And they did. They rarely meet expectations.
Well, the expectations are low. They could have played better than that if they would have had Brock Purdy as their if they would have blocked.
No, yes. I'm not buying that. They would have messed that up too.
Well, so. Okay, but you know what I'm saying though.
Yeah.
If they would have had anybody who could take a snap, they would have played better than that with that defense. I mean, we were like, hey, the Jets are they're on the uptick now. I mean, four quick months later, they're the Jets again. And nobody even wants the job.
It's eye-opening. It really is. Now, Nathaniel Hackett did interview.
I'm looking at you like, come on, bro.
I'm just stating facts.
Listen, as a Bills fan, you hope he takes it.
Yeah.
Because
I think that's safe to say.
He does not have a reputation like a Mike, like a LaFleur did when he took the job, or any of these other guys who are now. Well, a lot of them are head coaches, like Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah.
His brother Matt LaFleur. Sean McVay, of course. Kyle Shanahan. These guys who is kind of this other generation of head coaches. Nate Hackett is not on. To me, is not on that level. Not with those, and I go. I know it went south in Denver, and I know Russ and all that. But there's a lot of coaches out there who I believe would not have had Russell Wilson looking the way he looked this year. Alex Van Pelt is a better candidate, the OC at Cleveland, or Cincinnati. I'm sorry, no, he's
Cleveland.
Cleveland. So I'm just saying, there's a lot of candidates out there who are better than The only reason they hired Nathaniel Hackett was because they thought they had a shot at Tom Brady.
Aaron Rodgers.
They thought they had a shot at Aaron Rodgers.
By
hiring Nathaniel Hackett. Because Nate worked with him for a couple of years. And I'm sure that Aaron said a few nice things about him in some setting or other. Aaron Rodgers ain't following Nate Hackett anywhere.
I would tend to think not, but stranger things have happened. And that guy's preferences change with the wind direction. What would you say, Steve, was the weak link to the Vikings team this year?
Well, it was their defense.
It was. And it cost defensive coordinator Ed Donatell his job. He was fired after one season and their playoff loss as they made Daniel Jones look like a world beater last week, throwing for 300 yards. So there's another coordinator position that is open. Right. It's crazy. There are a lot of coordinator positions open right now.
Yeah.
Like more than I am used to seeing by a wide margin, and it's not because head coaches got canned and you have to fill out a whole staff. There are head coaches around the league that have fired coordinators.
Yeah, and a couple of instances, though, you got to think, too. Like in Tampa Bay, and I can't remember the guys, the head
Todd
coach.
Bowles.
Todd Bowles was saddled with the old staff.
He inherited the staff. So you understand that.
I get that.
But now you got Robert Saleh looking for an OC.
Right.
You know, you've got Minnesota O'Connell. He's looking for a defensive coach. Run down the list. So, yeah, there's several. In addition to the coordinators that are going to be needed for the five new head coaches that have to get hired around the league.
Right.
So plus, a lot of jobs.
Plus, you've got a staff that's hanging in limbo in Indianapolis waiting on that to happen.
Well,
Jeff Saturday may have to – if Jeff Saturday gets that job, and they just interviewed him yesterday.
Yep.
He'll probably keep some of those guys.
He might.
You know? It has become the new – because we've seen them have such an effect, not that they didn't for a long, long time, but now it always – you know, there's a head coach and everybody else. Now it's the head coach and who are his coordinators, who are his staff. People are starting to really take an interest in that, and owners are starting to – realize that if they got the right head coach, he may not be able to get his staff right away. Sean McDermott, it took him – it was his third year before he said, you know what, I like these guys now. I got this in the right spot. And certainly it was, you know, 2020 when they really exploded 3 years after he got the job. So that's when it really took effect. Same thing with all these guys. If you got the right guy, like in the Jets case, Robert Saleh, we've got a lot of love and respect for the guy. He's a leader of guys, and they got that defense rolling. They got, mm-hmm. you know, they're kind of doing things in the draft. They had all that stuff going. And if he doesn't have the offensive side of the ball the way he wants it, you still don't, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's just fix what's wrong.
Yeah.
And I think it's the right thing. You're seeing it around the league a lot. And I think for the first time, because of the quarterbacks involved with all the – like you look at the top of the AFC, because of the quarterbacks involved, you know, San Diego, LA Chargers are getting rid of their offensive staff. Because of these quarterbacks, coordinators are a premium now because you've got what it takes. You've got all those pieces. Just get somebody in there who knows how to do it. And – those guys are highly sought after now, and I'm shocked. Well, not shocked. I say it all the time, but I told you so. There are a lot of jobs that are no thank you'd in this mm-hmm. league because it is not good.
Yeah. And
or not as good as where he's at.
And it'll be interesting to see how long it takes some of these teams to fill those jobs that are not – quote-unquote coveted by quality candidates.
Think about
it. Somebody will take the job, but it might not – be choice 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or
right.
6.
And I, we don't know there's a bunch of illustrations we can throw out there of just in the last couple of months. How many guys' phone rang when Frank Reich got fired in Indianapolis? You think Jeff Saturday was like the first guy he called?
Well, with Ursay, it might have been.
There's got to be, you don't think Peyton Manning got a call?
Oh, well, sure. I mean, whatever.
Or anybody, or Bill Polian, like, Bill, who should I hire? Somebody like that, right?
Probably.
You don't think there's some guys who got called first and said, mm-mm-mm?
Sure.
And I'll say this. If
one phone call. Hey, we're calling. We're going to try and see, we're going to might interview you for our offensive coordinator position. He goes, yeah, okay. What are going to be the parameters? He goes, well, we want you to work with Zach Wilson, and we want you to make it work. And he's like, I've seen the guy play. No.
Yeah.
I can't. There's nothing
can't
you can
fix
do.
That.
I can't fix that.
Right.
You know, or I can. I got a chance with Deshaun Watson.
Or I don't want to.
Yeah, I've got a. I got a chance with Deshaun Watson. Yeah. We struggled at the end of this season. We're going to get better. I got a chance here. I'll just wait.
I think they're going to be waiting a little while before they get somebody to take that gig. It is Friday, which means the OBL Fan Friday mailbag is open. Any questions you have for us on the NFL or the Bills, fire them off at us, and we'll be happy to answer those for you. We also have coming up in just about 10 minutes' time, the owner and operator of QB Summit, which works with Josh Allen and Joe Burrow in the offseason. Jordan Palmer will be joining us. And then second hour of the show, as always on Friday, we have Greg Cosell with us from NFL Films to dice up the X's and O's on this Bills-Bengals matchup. We're going to take a break here, and we also have sound bits on the way as well, Steve. That'll be coming your way as well. But Jordan Palmer coming up in short order here on a Friday edition of One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. We'll have Jordan Palmer with us in just a few minutes. In the meantime, we want to take you into Buffalo's locker room in this week's edition of Sound Bits, presented by Tim Hortons. Wide receiver Isaiah McKenzie, head coach Sean McDermott, quarterback Josh Allen, and more dish out their thoughts on Sunday's divisional playoff game with the Cincinnati Bengals.
I feel like we were ready the first time, and it's playoffs, and we have no choice but to be ready, or we're going home. And I feel like now it's more important than ever, you know, to go out there and, you know, think what we thought in the first game, and then bring it to this game, and a lot more. So we understand. Yeah, every week is important. Every game is important at this point. And everybody's trying to get to the big stage. And I feel like you got to take it one play at a time, one practice at a time, and just do your job to help the team win.
You know, I think you look at two games, you take out of it what you can, and, you know, I'm sure they're doing the same. And you know, you try and shape a good game plan based on you know, the footage you have.
You know, pick some stuff here and there. You know, we only had 8 plays in the game, and so when you go back and you look at those 8 plays, you can kind of get a sense of, you know, and they're feeling the same way, you know, get a sense of how they were trying to attack us, and same vice versa, how we were trying to attack them. And so obviously, you know, probably a couple more wrinkles here and there for both sides of the football. So like I said, we're excited about the opportunity. It's a good football team. We're a good football team too. It's going to be a hell of an atmosphere, and we're excited to play.
No, I feel like preparation's still the same. They're a great team. We give them credit. We know how good they are. We respect everything about them. It's going to be a fun Sunday at 3 p.m., so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, we only had, you know, one drive against them, so it's kind of hard to take anything away from that. And, you know, they played the same team twice since we played them, and there's not much carryover in terms of what our offense does and their offense does. So it's kind of, you know, original game plan thought, and again making adjustments on the fly. You know, they've played certain teams certain ways, and again they can come out and play us completely different than what the first drive, you know, said that they were going to play us. So again, it's just being smart, you know, decision wise, trying to find the open guy, getting the run game involved, and like I said, just trying to be a balanced offense against this team.
Yeah, I mean, after the whole week of studying and all that stuff, you know, you start to learn a little bit, and now we didn't get to play them, obviously, but after another week that we're going to have a full stand, it'll hopefully feel like we know them pretty well.
So, you know, for those many plays that we play, you know, we definitely know it's a physical game, what they can do on offense and defense. So for us, just going out there, you know, being ready for it to go for a whole 60 minutes. I'll definitely say, you know, just taking this lineman and putting him in his face, you know, whether that's getting the ball out quick and, you know, us batting the ball up in the air or putting his lineman right on top of him.
All right. So that is Sound Bits presented by Tim Hortons. Yeah, the popular question this week for the offense has been, curbing the turnovers. The popular question in general has been, how much are of all the preparation you put in week 17 carries over to now, 3 weeks later, if at all?
Yeah.
And it, while I think it gave him a jump start, I don't get the sense they're pulling too much from that. I mean, the matchups could change. Perfect example, Sam Hubbard, one of their top pass rushers, was inactive for that game due to an injury 3 weeks ago. He's healthy now. He's part of the equation. You got to adjust.
Right. Yeah. There's some stuff. Offensively, will they play five plays, something like that?
Yeah,
the
Bills
on drive,
had one possession since he was in the middle of their second one.
Not even the middle. They're just getting started. Yeah. So there's not much you can take out. The game plans, a lot of the stuff you had in week 17, probably going to use because he never got to it. Yeah. And plus, hard to take away when Cincinnati played the same team, Baltimore, twice in a row, week 18 and then wild card round. And the first week 18 game was, like, meaningless. There's just not much you can glean from that that's going to change. Now, the in-game adjustments and personnel differences.
Well, that's a different story.
That's a different story. It becomes about matchups, which is what we've always heard about the Bills' offense, and certainly it is for the Bengals' offense. And their offensive line of the Bengals is going to be vastly different. Like you said, their defense got a little bit healthier, while their offensive line obviously is way behind where it was. It'll be interesting to see how that affects it. But I think that's what the players will do now. They'll go back and refresh their memory on what their game plan was in that week 17. They'll evaluate as to what they need to change. The coaches will, and if they do, they will. But, man, you can really hone in on the individuals that you expect to see when you line up. And that's a little bit different than most games.
We have to take a break here, and during that break, we'll connect with Jordan Palmer, quarterback coach and former NFL QB, to join us here on the show to talk Burrow and Allen. We'll do that after this timeout here on One Pills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Pills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live, where this week's game sponsor is Northtown. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown, the official automotive dealer of the Buffalo Bills. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Pleased to be joined now by the quarterback coach and former NFL QB. This guy's busy, Steve. He's now the director of quarterback development for the XFL, and he co-hosts the Room podcast with NFL quarterback Kyle Allen. It is Jordan Palmer joining us, friend of the show. Jordan, how you doing? Thanks for giving us some time.
Yeah, I'm doing great. Busy's a good word. Busy's a good word, but it's also a good thing to be. So how are you guys doing? You guys loving it? This is you guys been talking for months now about weeks like this. Flip this interview around. You guys pumped?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can't imagine. In fact, we're so pumped that we're full of angst. The problem with these games like this, Jordan, you know it. You have a great season. You're 13-3, and you're hitting on all cylinders. Even when you don't play well, you score 30 points. I mean, it couldn't be better. But then all of a sudden, you look over, and there's another team that is exactly like you that you have to beat. You don't get it when you get to this point of the playoffs. You don't get to meet those 2-14 teams that are struggling.
No, you don't. There's some worthy adversaries out there for the Buffalo Bills. And that's what's so great about this sport, right? We saw the other side of what this looks like at the college level with that championship game. And we see it in the NBA. But, you know, recently we don't see it in the NFL. I mean, just to think of, any Bills fan's going to never forget, you know, the way the season ended last year. And that wasn't even the AFC Championship or the Super Bowl. That ended in the divisional round. So there's so much at stake when you get to these playoffs. And, so much has gone into it for everybody. So many fans have put so much into it that what's fun is all that stuff kind of goes out the window. Now you just got to play your best ball. And, you know, everyone can say take it one game at a time or one play at a time. I think that's really easy to say. And most people would believe that that's how you win. But the elite teams actually do it, and so now's the chance to see. You can talk about it and practice it, but now can you really actually go one play at a time, one quarter at a time, one series at a time?
So, Jordan, concerning Josh, the big focus this week from the media was naturally the turnovers. He's had more than his fair share of them this season. At the same time, I think Josh is one of the most self-aware quarterbacks I've ever been around in terms of critiquing his own play. And I was encouraged by what he said. You know, he's not going to let the negative plays affect his approach, and you cannot do that in the postseason. Knowing him like you do, though, and knowing how sometimes he can be hyper-competitive, I found the defensive coordinator for the Dolphins' approach interesting. They blitzed him on 40% of his dropbacks, and they were giving him a lot of one-on-ones on the outside with cover zero. And I think I wonder if Josh's own – I wonder if Josh felt challenged by that, like, oh, you don't think I can hit this again? And that's why he went downfield as much as he did, even after – he had a lot of success, and they were up 17-0. Is there a recognition of time and score that has to work itself into a quarterback's psyche in those situations?
I think it's easy to say you're up, protect the lead, you're down, let's let it rip. But the reality is when you call a play, that play, you have an idea in what you want in that play. And I can think back to a few years ago when Josh had his breakout year, early in the season, they were playing Miami, and we're up big. And he had Stephon Diggs deep down the field. I don't remember what the score was, you guys might, but it was at Miami, I believe. And I think they were up, you know, two or three scores. And they took a shot, and Josh missed Stephon Diggs. You guys remember what happened on the next play?
I honestly don't.
They came right back and dialed it up again and hit it. And it was that mindset of, we think they're playing a coverage that this play is going to work against. So what's the read on this play? So, I mean, with young quarterbacks, no, you want to think about being in 4-minute offense and protecting leads. Josh, this Bills offense is the defense, regardless of what the score is. And you want to make great decisions and deliver the ball with timing and accuracy.
One of the things, you know, this game really, I mean, it's brought into focus by Josh and Joe. And since you've worked with both of them, give us the ups and downs, strengths and weaknesses of both these guys. And more importantly, each coaching staff has to handle these guys differently, right? I mean, what have the Bills and Bengals coaching staffs been able to do to maximize both these guys and their different skills?
I think it starts with all the success in any of these teams starts with leadership at the right ownership level, front office. And so when I think of what, you know, Brandon Bean and the family, what they've done, Josh, all of it, right? There's a lot of pieces here. Some people aren't even there anymore, right? Is it started with understanding his strengths and weaknesses and building around that. So part of that is the play callers and the way they're designed in the offense, obviously the personnel around them. But I think it goes all the way down to people like Matt Barkley being in the room with them. You know what I mean? So they really surround the good teams that have the premier quarterbacks that are going to sign big extensions or have signed big extensions. There's certainly talent and there's work ethic and there's all those things there. But what you see is you look at everything that surrounds that quarterback and you go, good decision. Good decision. That was a good call. Yeah, that's the right person. And so I look at both these teams and I go, wow. So Joe has an offensive-minded head coach. You don't have to have it, right? Josh has a defensive-minded head coach, and this has gone really well. But with Joe, on the other side of it, because Bills fans are familiar with, I could go down the list of the great things that the Bills have done to surround Josh, but everybody's familiar with those. But Joe, you know, it's T. Higgins that same year getting a rookie receiver, and then the next year getting Ja'Marr Chase, who's not just what he is, they have that chemistry. You know, they loaded up on O-line and defense in free agency, spent in free agency last year like they never have before, and I'm very familiar with the Bengals organization. Just some of, you know, the backups they have around him, and they've just done a great job of supporting him, getting like-minded guys. And so, you know, this game, and then whoever wins this game and the next game versus probably Kansas City, and honestly, what Jacksonville is for 1 year now starting to do is really at the ownership level build around the quarterback. And so I just think when you do that, you're going to have a chance. You're going to be in every game and have a chance to make a run at the end. And to be honest, that's about as high of a goal as you can ask for year to year, is to be in every game with a chance to make a run at the end.
Right. Jordan, I know that Joe leads the league since 2020 with 17 touchdown passes of 40 yards or more. He seems to get more from his guys' yards after catch than Josh does, who is kind of more of a put it on the receiver type thrower. you know, rather than leading a guy into space maybe as much as Joe is. You can agree or disagree with that. It's just from a bird's eye view and an untrained eye view. I'm wondering, though, it seems like Burrow has incorporated a little bit of the Brady approach to his passing game. It's really not all about those big plays. There's a lot of short to intermediate stuff that has kind of kept Cincinnati on schedule a lot this season. I'm just wondering if you felt that was a major change, or maybe he's always had that in his game.
I think Joe's had that in his game. I started working with him his junior year at LSU, and you know, certainly he's elevated his game year to year. But, you know, part of that is the personnel. I think there's 3, 4, maybe 5, depending on who you factor in here, people who can score from anywhere on the field, like at any point. Right? The league's full of fast guys, but I think you're really talking, you know, Jamar Chase, Tyreek Hill, Lamar Jackson, if you want to put a quarterback in there. You know, there's a couple of guys who can they can score from anywhere. You know, they can actually break 5 tackles and score, right? So Jamar Chase is one of those guys. So I think you're going to get a lot of yards after catch when you have that guy on your team. But what Joe does is, and I'll say both of them, you know, I work with quarterbacks of all ages. I run QB Sign. It's a tour going around the country. I see, you know, middle school and high school kids as well. I've got a couple of really high picks in my draft class right now. I just left the field going from one to another. Is what I see is the evolution of quarterbacks, and both these guys are examples of this. When you're getting elevated at the high school level, right, you go from a 3-star to a 4-star, a 4-star to a 5-star. You go from an offer from a mid-major to 5 SEC offers or big Power 5 offers. When you're elevating as a young quarterback, you're usually getting elevated based off of your playmaking ability. Okay. Nobody says, look at this 5-star quarterback. He's the best check down shallow cross thrower I've ever seen. Doesn't really make plays, but man, he can get rid of that ball quickly. Right. Says no one ever. So what happens is you're rewarded for that. Right. Then you go to 7-on-7 tournaments. You're rewarded for that. Okay. Then you go to college and you take your playmaking, what you got you there. And then hopefully you go to a place that starts to teach you how to be a distributor of the football. Sometimes checking it down is the great play, right? Sometimes throwing that ball out of bounds is the best play you can make on that play. Okay, so you learn how to become a distributor of the football. And then when you go to the NFL, the game is predominantly about distributing the football and making a play when you need to. And there's some great quarterbacks like Tom Brady who distribute the football and honestly don't make that many great plays. Like tell me the time that you saw Tom Brady hurdle over a guy, juke another, and rip 160 across his body, right? He just hasn't. Well, what's happening with Josh and Joe and Patrick and these elite young guys in the league right now and Herbert, and there's, you know, I can keep going, is they're really quickly becoming distributors of the football. Now, that takes buy-in, but that takes phenomenal coaching. Early on, that takes a Brian Daboll and a Ken Dorsey, right, to teach you how to distribute the football. Even having Derek Anderson in the room his first year helps you learn how to distribute the football. You think Case Keenum is where he is right now because of his playmaking ability or his ability to distribute the football? Make sense? So when you start really learning how to distribute the football, and I think Steph Curry is another great example of this. He led all of college basketball in attempts. He was top 4 in scoring. He was top 3 in threes at Davidson University. But what's the evolution of Steph Curry's game? He's become an incredible passer, incredible at spacing, incredible at using defenders to get other people open. And I think that's what we're seeing out of Josh, Joe, Patrick, these guys who can make a play when they need to. But the foundation of their game is they know how to distribute the football.
As we get into this game coming up on Sunday, it has been said now that Jonah Williams, the left tackle for the Bengals, is out. Kappa is out, their right guard. They've got, and then since week 15, they also lost Lyle Collins. 3 offensive linemen are going to be out of this game for the Bengals. Now, certainly they've got a whole week to rev up for it. But how does that change the game, particularly not just, you know, for one series when a guy comes in and finishes, but this is a 4 quarters of a football game. You know, how, over the course of an entire game, how does that change it for these offenses?
Well, I think it does change it. Now, I think there's another stat that Joe is the least sacked quarterback over that last 4-game span, too. I heard something like that. No, yeah. I'm not a stat guy, but so they've managed, meaning they've done a good job with it. Now, this will be new, though, for Cincinnati. I would assume that game sold out. Is that right?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm kidding. So that's going to be loud, right? So silent cadence is not something that's practiced with the twos in practice. You know what I mean? So that noise, that getting off the ball, that rush, you know, Ed Oliver's going to feel quick, you know, these guys inside.
Yeah.
So that's an element. And then also just fatigue. You know, that's a long game. Those big guys, man, they're on the move. And it's going to be a maximum effort situation for every single person, every position. So O-line, you know, does fatigue play a role in that? Does Buffalo adjust, you know, heavier bull rush early, those types of things? And so I think it's going to play a role, but I also think that Cincinnati's going to understand what the limitations they have better than Buffalo is, right? You're going to know what your own limitations are better than your opponent's going to know them. So I think they're going to do a great job like they have, you know, in a Super Bowl run last year, where they put their best players in the position to make plays, and then they protect the ones who are potential liabilities. And I think great coaches do two things, and I try and do this as a developer of quarterbacks. You want to get the best out of the best, and you want to get the most out of the least, right? So our best players, we need to get the best out of them. And the guys who aren't capable of helping us a whole lot, I need to get as much as I possibly can out of them. And so I think this will be one of those situations, and we're going to see Zach Taylor and company, I think, put together a great game plan. Now they got to go execute it.
Jordan, thanks very much for the time. We know you're busy. You're literally going from one field to the other. So thanks for carving out some time for us to talk thanks, a little Jordan. Bit about Joe and Josh. We know you'll be watching on Sunday.
Yeah, this is an interesting, awkward, fun one. Hey, how about this? I coached my son's flag team, first and second grade.
Yeah.
And he picks. We were the Bills last year. We won the championship. Not that anybody's paying attention, but we did win that championship. And he flipped just because he has a couple favorite teams. So we're the Bengals. Guess who we play tonight?
I'm going to say the Bills.
The Bengals?
The Bills.
Yeah.
The Bills. Oh, my God.
So we got Bengals-Bills matchup. So you guys follow along on my Instagram because I'm going to be on Instagram stories. This is like when you play Madden against somebody to see how the game's going to go.
Yeah.
We got Bengals-Bills tonight at Estancia Sports Park.
Oh, that's awesome.
See how this
awesome.
Good
luck.
Out.
Well, good luck tonight.
Good luck, man. Thanks. Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks. Right.
That's Jordan Palmer from QB Summit. Guy is neck deep in quarterback development. He is killing it down out there out west. You know, he's been working with Josh for years. Joe Burrow, I think, hopped on board. I want to say it's 2 years ago now, but he said he's been working with him since his junior year in college.
Right.
Well, I remember reading a story about Joe working with Jordan. I think it was Jeff Feldman, journalist Jeff Feldman, that wrote the story. And he came to Jordan saying, hey, I want a little extra on my fastball. And he went through the same thing that Josh did when they kind of digitally map your body and try to maximize your throwing motion to put the most velocity on the football as possible. He added 5 miles per hour to his throw.
Yeah, that's
so
significant.
The guy gets results for these dudes, and that's all they want. They want to be the best version of themselves, and he is an expert at it. He really is. And the XFL hired him as their director of quarterback development.
Right, and that league is all about development. It's interesting. Jordan's – obviously, a lot of people in football know that Jordan's brother, Carson, was the number one overall pick by the Cincinnati Bengals way back in the day. When he came out, Carson was said to – one of the reasons Carson was so good, big, tall, big arm.
Beautiful throw.
He was technically the most perfect quarterback anybody had seen coming out.
Yeah, perfect throwing motion.
Drop back, footwork, release, arm, all of that stuff. He had all the technical issues that were great. And then he got drafted by the Bengals when they were really not a good team. And he struggled for most of his career and actually forced his way out after a 10-year career.
Raiders and then Arizona.
And Jordan was his backup for a minute there in Cincinnati. They played together. But Jordan knows, you know, it's all that – it's, you know, you start talking – and it's a little bit like pitchers in the major leagues. They start saying, well, he had his release point and it's that, and they start talking, you know, kind of pretty technical stuff. It all goes into football in a game that's so freewheeling like football can be when they drop back. There's a lot of technical issues these guys know, and man, oh man, do they get results. Listen, if you've got a kid that can play quarterback, you need to get him coached up, because if he comes out of high school as a 5-star, he's going to be making 7 figures.
Yeah.
As a 19-year-old, 18-year-old.
Yeah.
It's crazy. With the NIL stuff, it's nuts.
It's pretty wild. We have to take a break here, though, because when we come back, we are talking X's and O's with your friend and ours. Greg Cosell, senior producer from NFL Films, makes his weekly appearance here to chop up the X's and O's for Bills Bengals next here on One Bills Live.
This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, here we are, hour number two on a Friday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, One Bills Live, and we know what that means. It's our weekly visit from senior producer from NFL Films and co-host of ESPN's NFL Matchup Show. It's Greg Cosell joining us, and his weekly segment is presented by Scott Lawnyard, an official commercial site work partner of the Buffalo Bills. Greg, a lot has been made of Josh Allen's turnovers from last week, and we understand why it gives Bills fans angst. I will say the Bills, when they have three turnovers or more, are 4-1 this season, and three of those four wins have come in the last 3 weeks. I know they might be playing with fire here, Greg, but this is a team that seems to find a way to get around it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously no one wants turnovers, and you have to look at each one, I've always believed, as a separate issue. You can't just look at a number on a page. As we know, no coach wants turnovers. But, you know, they're a really interesting offensive team. I think both you guys would agree that when you think of, let's say, timing, rhythmic offenses like the Niners come to mind, you probably wouldn't put the Bills in that category, but yet they score a lot of points every week. And it's they're kind of a, to me, they're almost an aberration at times. They're just different. But, you know, they're very quarterback centric, maybe even more so, amazingly enough, more recently, because Josh has really been pushing the ball down the field. I mean, that first interception to Xavien Howard was definitely on Josh. That's on him, because that was actually a flood concept, and he wanted to get the ball to Dawson Knox, and Knox was covered. And John Brown is really a clear out on that play. And the ball should never go to John Brown. But, you know, Josh thinks like that. That's the way he plays the game. But he also makes plays and throws that others won't make. I mean, the touchdown he threw to Gabe Davis, which I guess put them up by 10 at that time, correct? Yes, yes. I believe that made it 34-24.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how many guys even attempt that throw, much less make that throw. So, obviously, it's a balancing act. Their offense at times looks a little – I always try to think of the right word, you know, fractured, whatever the word might be, but it's yet they score a lot of points.
Yeah, I've been throwing this stat around. Anybody who'd listen, Matty Glab gave it to me. The Bills are 4-1 in games where they turn the ball over three times or more, three times. Yep. If they turn it over three times, they're 4-1 in games like that. The rest of the league is 12-62. So
sure,
you can say that they're, you know, living on borrowed time. You can slice it any way you want to. But to me, that shows an enormous margin of error for this offense that maybe other teams don't have. And maybe that is a reflection of Josh and his ability to make plays. But they never lose a game by more than a couple of points. If they do, it's an overtime touchdown. And they're 25-4 over their last 29 games. I mean, they are a tough team to beat. And Josh and his big play and these throws that he makes are a big reason why.
Without question. I mean, think back. When was the last time they had a bad game? Wouldn't you say that was Indianapolis early last season?
Midway through.
I mean,
last
other
season,
than that,
yes.
I don't think they've had a game where, even when they've lost, and they haven't lost many, as you said, Steve, they don't lose by. They're never out of games. And say what you want about Josh, but he's the kind of quarterback that makes it so that you're never out of games. I mean, how many times in the fourth quarter has he led drives? And the interesting thing about that is he's led a lot of drives in the fourth quarter, which have been in some ways what would be considered anti-Josh. In other words, long, lengthy, methodical, patient drives. Right, Brownie? I mean, you look at the Detroit game. You
Second
look at
Miami
the
game.
The Miami game in Buffalo when it started to snow in the fourth quarter. Those are sort of anti-Josh drives the way most people think of Josh. You know, those are patient drives. So, you know, you can say what you want. And look, you guys know as well as I do, there are certainly some concerns on offense. I wouldn't say it's the most talented offense in the NFL by any stretch of the imagination overall. But they win games and they play and they never get blown out.
Yeah. Looking at some of Josh's numbers from last week, though, Greg, he attempted 21 throws of 10 yards or more, 13 throws of 20 yards or more. For those that don't know, that's a fat number. And I know it's because Josh Boyer, the defensive coordinator for the Dolphins, for some reason decided, I'm going cover zero. I mean, he went cover zero on 3rd and 15, Greg. We never see
that.
Blitzed on 40% of his dropbacks. Do you attribute what Miami was doing as the sole reason why Josh was chucking it down the field as much as he was?
Look, I think we know, Brownie, that Josh has a really aggressive mentality. That's probably not likely to change. So the opportunities presented themselves. He's going to take those opportunities. The third and 15 you mentioned was the 52-yarder to Diggs.
Yeah.
And, you know, he saw, you know, cover zero. He had Diggs matched on Howard, and Diggs ran right by him. And he made a great throw. Those are the throws that he makes. But I certainly think that his mentality is such that he's going to do that more often than not. You wonder if you know, earlier in the year, I would say, and I think you guys would agree, there were more rhythmic type throws where the ball was coming out, and there were more sort of sustaining type throws. They still hit big plays, but overall there were more sustaining throws. Now, the other thing to keep in mind, if Dawson Knox doesn't drop the touchdown and Shakir doesn't drop that, he probably throws for what, 425 yards, something like that.
Right.
You know, so, you know, it's very difficult to say that he did not have a good game given the number of plays that he did make.
How do you think the Bills' offense has evolved over the course of this year under Ken Dorsey? I mean, they started out, they hung 31 on the defending world champions in week one, hung 41 on the number one seed Tennessee Titans in week two, and went on from there. Then later on, you know, 38-3 over Pittsburgh early when, you know, the Steelers weren't quite themselves. But this is, you know, this is a team that was, you know, came out really efficiently early in the season. How has this evolved? And I get it. Miami game was a little bit of an aberration because of the defense they played. But, you know, what do you think this offense has grown into this season with Ken Dorsey?
You know, look, I can only be honest based on film study. And I would say this. I would say that it's probably too dependent on Josh Allen. And because he's so highly skilled, I would still make the argument that in terms of pure physical talent, he's the best quarterback in the league. Now, others can discuss whether he's, quote unquote, the best overall, but just in terms of pure physical traits, I think he's the best quarterback in the league. But I think they're so reliant on him. And here's how I would answer that as far as the run game. I don't think there's a big connection between their run game and their pass game, Steve. You know, I don't think, you know, you look at some teams and you see that the pass game, a lot of the concepts can work off what they do in the run game. I don't think that's really the case with Buffalo. And I don't know why that is. I never place blame on coaches. I'm not there through the process. So since I'm not there, I have no idea what's discussed or what's not discussed or what the process is. But I would say that's one area that just watching tape and seeing every team, that's something I think I'd like to see more of. A better, you know, I've used this word a couple of times this week and people have laughed at me. You know, they say, well, that's a big word to talk about football. But there's not a lot of synchronicity between the run game and the pass game.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think you'd like to see more of that. It might open up some more opportunities in the pass game that are easier throws where you don't have to push it down the field, you know. But I think that this offense has evolved, Steven, to where they do push it down the field a lot. And Josh attempts a lot of those throws. And because he can make them, and at times does, you know, it seems like everything's okay. I mean, the bottom line is, this is the best third down offense in the NFL. And what does everybody say about third down? It's the quarterback's down. So something is being done that's right. But sometimes when you watch tape, it just seems like it's erratic. Let's put it that way.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about Bengals defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo, a guy that loves to disguise through tendency breaking. You know, he'll try to anticipate or he'll self-scout himself, realize what his tendencies are, is break the tendency and yet disguise it some other way to confuse opposing quarterbacks. Is it safe to say that Josh and Ken Dorsey are absolutely going to have to adjust in-game this week, maybe more than ever?
I would say that's fair. You know, again, you don't know until the game's played, but that's been Lou Anarumo's MO. You know, we've seen him make meaningful adjustments throughout the course of the game. Certainly when they play Kansas City, that comes to mind. But when all's said and done, they end up playing a lot of single high safety. And I think there's ways to attack that. And I think you have to think in those terms that you have to have some three high beaters. They play a lot of cover three. You know, there's route concepts such as flood, which we've seen with the Bills. They've tried to get Dawson Knox involved with those route concepts. I can remember the 45-yarder against Miami in that same game where it snowed in the fourth quarter. That was against cover three. I remember he hit Diggs for 19 yards, I believe it was, against New England early in that game against cover three on another flood type concept. You know, there's always routes to attack certain coverages. I guess it'll depend on how the game goes, Brownie, on what Luan Aramo does. I mean, you know, if the Bills all of a sudden, you know, have 14 points after three drives, he probably has plan B ready to go. You know, if all of a sudden we're in the second quarter and it's a 6-3 game, he probably feels like there's not a lot he has to change.
Yeah. Give me an idea of what you thought about the Bills' defensive secondary in this last game in the wild card against Miami. Certainly, Skylar Thompson was not going to maybe light it up.
No.
But how did the Bills play the Dolphins with the two most dangerous guys on the field for the Dolphins were their two wideouts, and it was just a question of whether Skylar Thompson was going to be able to get him the ball enough. What were your thoughts about the way the Bills' secondary held up?
Well, I thought they knew that, and their highest percentage coverage was split safety zone, which was dominant on third down, although there were selective snaps of man coverage, snaps of two-man, cover one robber. I thought that once Elam came in, I thought he played well. I thought that was the kind of game where, you know, watching his tape in college, being long, athletic, you know, I thought he played well. You know, you're always going to get a solid performance from White. You know, every once in a while, you're going to get beat by guys who can run like that. That happens. They're going to need a really good performance again against three really good receivers. And you know, you guys know how I feel about Teron Johnson. I think he's one of the best slot corners in the game. They obviously think so in Buffalo because he plays every snap. You know, the interesting matchup to me in this game, guys, is the Bills pass rush. They need to generate some kind of pass rush against three backup offensive linemen. Now, the Bengals know this, and Burrow the last 2 weeks has been very conservative. He's been getting the ball out. He hasn't taken the vertical shots, which we've seen throughout much of the year. And by the way, that doesn't mean he's not going to do that this week. You never know. All bets are off. It's a playoff game. You don't know. All you have is what has happened prior, but you don't know what's going to happen in this game. Because Burrow throughout the year – until recently, was very aggressive. When he had what he saw as one-on-one outside the numbers, he would take vertical shots and give Higgins and Chase a chance to make plays. So he certainly could do that again. But I think their D-line pass rush, however they choose to do it, whether it's four down linemen, whether it's three down linemen with either Milano or Edmonds adding in as the fourth rusher, not the fifth rusher, the fourth rusher, you know, somehow they have to get pressure. They have to defeat that O-line.
Speaking of their offense, Greg, running the football has been a slog for them all season long, whether they were healthy or not. Now they're not healthy. How much does that cater to the Bills' defense potentially making the Bengals more one-dimensional than maybe they already are?
And I think that's critical, Brownie, because they do try to run it. It's not as if they never try to run it. And so you have to – you have to stop them so you get to the second and longs and the third and longs where at least their play calling will become more predictable. That has to be a major part of this game. This can't be the week that they get their run game going if you're a Bills fan.
Right.
So that's critical because, look, every coach in the league will tell you if you can get into long yarded situations, you feel like as a defensive coordinator that you have the advantage. Your playbook becomes wider and bigger, and there's more things you can do. We've seen Milano be really effective as a blitzer. We've seen Edmonds now being used at times as a blitzer. Teron Johnson coming off the slot, off the edge. So they've done a nice job with their selective use of pressure because, as you guys know, they're not a high percentage blitz defense, but they do it selectively and they do it well.
And what do you think that looks like against this offensive line? When they had the injury and Jonah Williams had to leave the game with a dislocated kneecap, it seemed to me Cincinnati's offense really dropped off. They stopped moving the ball consistently, and they stopped scoring points. I guess the question is why?
Well, they got very conservative. Keep in mind, the longest pass play last week by Burrow was 19 yards. Right. That rarely ever happens. So, you know, they've gotten conservative. Obviously, they played an offense last week that was not likely to put up a lot of points. We'll see what happens this week. I mean, look, all we have is what's transpired up to this point. There's not many games. I mean, can you recall a game where the Bills scored 10 points? I mean, you know, you would think that the Bengals are going to have to score in the 20s to compete and win this game, which, by the way, they can. I mean, this is not a gimme. You guys know that. But the point is they're going to have to score. And, you know, and unless the Bills really give them short fields, which could happen, obviously, they're going to have to move the ball and they're going to have to score. And normally to do that with any kind of consistency, you need some kind of explosives in your offense. And they really haven't played that way the last couple of weeks.
Greg, do you have any other game besides this one that kind of intrigues you based on the matchups? Because this one seems, I think most people feel this is the marquee one just because of the two young quarterbacks involved. But is there a 1A?
I would agree. Well, just being in the Philly area, I'm obviously fascinated by the Philly game. But I would say the San Francisco Dallas game, probably from a tactical perspective, I find really intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering if this is the end of the road for Brock Purdy, who has been remarkably efficient as a starter, but I don't think he's seen a pass rush like this before.
Yeah, but I will say this, Brown, and you could be right. You never know how a game plays out. And if they get into long yardage, you could 100% be right. But the way the 49ers play offense, I think that actually puts a lot of pressure on Dallas, because Dallas is very multiple up front and they have a really good pass rush that attacks in many ways, but that's more of their second and long, third and long deal.
Yeah.
You know, if the Niners can stay ahead of the change, which they do as well as any team in the league, as you know, then I'm really curious to see how Dallas plays, because that's not how they want to play on defense. They want to be in an attacking mode, and the Niners, with the way they play offense, really prevent defenses from being in an attacking mode.
Why can't NFL defenses make Brock Purdy look bad?
Well, I think there's probably a couple of reasons for that. Number one, the Niners play a ton out of 21 personnel, yeah, with two backs, Juszczyk, and a tight end. So what do NFL defenses do in response? For the most part, they play their base defense, whatever it may be. In Dallas's case, it's big nickel with three safeties. But as you know, Steve, most teams' pressure fronts and pressure concepts don't come out of base. They come out of their sub. So a lot of teams get stuck. They're not sure how to match up. Do we play base? And then, you know, we could get stuck in the pass game, you know, with the way they can line up McCaffrey and Samuel all over the formation. Do we play nickel because we're worried about all these pass weapons, but then we get mauled in their run game? But the bottom line point is most teams' pressure packages do not come out of their base personnel.
Right, yeah. So they have struggled. I mean, teams struggle to put pressure on Purdy because they don't have the right people on the field. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, to some degree. I mean, sure, can you pressure out of base? Of course you can, but that's not the way most teams are structured. And then the other factor you have is when they're in 21 personnel, they have five eligible receivers, including Juszczyk. Now he's part of this, that can line up anywhere in the formation. So now all of a sudden, you know, you line up defensively and here's McCaffrey split and here's Kittle split on the other side and here's Samuel in the backfield and here's Juszczyk in the slot. And all of a sudden now you get into communication issues. So what do teams do, Steve, as you well know, because you played in a spread offense that probably forced defenses to do the same thing. What do? They line up in what we call their default defense. And the 49ers know what that default defense is going to be with pretty much every team. So what does that do, Steve? It gives Purdy more information pre-snap, and that's what you're trying to do with your quarterback.
Yeah, especially when he's a rookie.
So Greg, one last thing. So has Purdy played as well as the other quarterbacks who he backed up? Is he playing as good as Garoppolo did? Is he playing as good as Trey Lance did before they got hurt? Is he the best guy that has taken snaps for them this year?
I would say the answer is probably yes, and there's two reasons for that real quick. Number one, he is very athletic and light on his feet, so he's added the play-action boot game and the second reaction game, movement game, which Garoppolo could not give them.
Right. All right.
Great stuff.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, as always. Enjoy the games this weekend.
All right, guys. Look forward to next week.
Yeah, we'll see you then. That's Greg Cosell, senior producer from NFL Films, also co-host of the ESPN NFL Matchup Show. Ooh. You know, we've talked about this game ad nauseum this week. I don't know if I have any greater clarity on it. Like, I have some notions as to what I think could happen, but it's like Greg says, too. Like, all we know is what has transpired over the course of the season, and we try to apply that to what could happen in this game, but we have no clue.
It's amazing.
No clue.
I give the Giants a better chance to go into Philly and upset the Eagles as a six seed than I do the Jaguars going into Kansas City and upsetting the one seed.
What do you like about the Giants?
Just they don't make mistakes. I mean, you saw the Jaguars throw four interceptions in the first half last week.
Yeah, that's not good.
You don't see the Giants do that. And the Giants do things that other teams do not, like the Buffalo Bills do. Daniel Jones will tuck it under his arm and run. He's part of their run game. And they have Saquon Barkley, who is a beast out of the backfield. They have the ability to control the pace of their offense.
That's true.
And I don't know. And they don't really. And so the Eagles' pass rush is a little bit negated by that. So I like that matchup. The Jaguars, I don't know if maybe they can. Maybe the Jags can go in and score with the Chiefs in Arrowhead. Because that's what you got to do,
yeah,
right? I mean, we found that out.
Everybody's pointing to the first meeting between the Chiefs and the Jaguars, which happened earlier this season. And, you know, Mahomes went off for four touchdown passes, and they kind of left him behind.
Right.
I think the Jaguars are a much different team now, though.
It was a 27-17 game.
Yeah.
And the Jags are a different team. Right.
I think they're a much better team now than they were back then. So
I'm not saying they're going to go in there and win, but I don't
think it'll be close.
I do too.
It'll be competitive.
The coaching staff is, I think Doug Peterson's excellent. I think he's excellent.
Andy Reid's disciple.
And he's excellent because he has his hand on the pulse of that. He really gets his team. He did that at Philly too when they won the Super Bowl. And he also has it in Jacksonville. And now they're starting to respond and play well underneath around him. So I don't know if their roster is where Kansas City's is and they're going to have enough horses to get it done. But that's the game plan, I think, if you're Jacksonville. You got to score with those guys.
Yeah. That one could be a shootout too. We have to take a break here. When we come back, we'll crack open the OBL Friday fan mailbag, answer some of your questions here next on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live, cracking open the OBL Friday fan mailbag, and we lead off with Mark, who asks, why are we not seeing the type of passing game that we saw against the Rams? Short to intermediate passes, then occasional shots and deep routes, deep crossers, deep comebacks, deep outs, etc. Well, I mean, a lot of times your approach is largely based on the coverage you're seeing and the approach of the opposing defense. The old take what they give you kind of deal. And, you know, I would expect the Bengals to probably mix in a little single safety high, but after watching Josh chuck it for 352 yards and three touchdowns last week, they may be more apt to play some other coverages as well so as not to invite him to beat them over the top. Because I'll just say this, their corners are good. They're not outstanding. Eli Apple, Cameron Taylor-Britt, a rookie. I mean, they're all right. You know what I mean? Like, you want to play with that fire? Play single safety high?
Yeah,
a lot?
I mean,
I don't know.
Most teams don't do it very often. They all do it at some point, but they don't do it very often for obvious reasons. It's a, you know, it's a little bit of a roll of the dice defensively, no matter how good your corners are. And I think, yeah, I'm with you. We live in a world of overreactions.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, oh my gosh, Josh is throwing it deep every single time he drops back to pass. And I'm like, listen, do you remember when it came out? Pat Mahomes, they're asking him, I go, how can we throw it deep? He goes, listen, if I look out and one of my guys is single covered on the outside, I'm throwing him the ball. And we're going deep. I am giving him a chance.
Yeah.
That's it. So Josh has got Steph Diggs, one of the top three or four wideouts in the game. Yeah, he's going to give the guy a chance. Gabe Davis, too. That's what these guys do. You can say what you want. That's the way it goes. And when the Miami Dolphins come out, and by the way,
their coordinator got fired for doing it.
He blitzed on 40% of Josh's dropbacks.
And you know, he crushed them. So,
I mean, they were a Dawson Knox drop and a Khalil Shakir drop from having at least 10 more points. I mean, you're talking 44 points.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's – yeah. And I'll say this, too. You know, the Dolphins had some drops, too, early in that game that might have changed the complexion of that game. They sure did. They make a difference. But I think it was more interesting if you think about how Cincinnati is going to play defense against this. I think they're going to defend this stuff a little bit more. I think it's going to be more about their front and what the teams the last couple of weeks, the Patriots and the Dolphins, did against Josh up front rather than in the back end. Because let's face it, we've got Steph Diggs, yeah, and Gabe Davis is good, and he's had some moments, but he's not as consistent as, you know, T. Higgins or Jamar Chase or Boyd. He hasn't had those kind of seasons. Mm-hmm. You got to worry about Diggs, and then everybody else, you got the Cincinnati Bengals might be thinking, I don't know. I think we can handle those other guys. Cole Beasley, you know, a rookie like Shakir. So I think they're thinking about defending Josh Allen. We heard Greg Cosell saying the Buffalo's offense is as quarterback-centric as any offense in the league, maybe too much. We've seen the last two teams the Bills played, the Patriots and the Dolphins, teams with a lot of experience against him, hold him to less than 20 yards or less rushing in both those last two games. They are not letting him get out of the pocket and win. That's something I think Cincinnati will look long and hard at trying to duplicate. Josh had 4 for 20 against the Dolphins and 9 for 17 against the Patriots 2 weeks before, something like that.
What, against pressure?
Yeah, no. I'm talking about rushing attempts and yards.
Oh, okay.
So that's what it was going to be. I think that's a way to really curtail the fact that Josh tucked it under his arm and run up the back of the defensive backs and gain a first down with his legs. They don't want him to do that. So I think that's more likely for us to see that against the Cincinnati defense rather than, you know, cover zero, cover one. I think it's going to be three-man rush with an aggressive spy, four-man rush with a spy, somebody sloughing off one of the running backs and catching up, you know, coming up into the pocket if they're blocking, all that kind of stuff. Like, you used to call it a green dog, which is, say I got man-to-man on Devin Singletary and the ball is snapped, I come up to cover him and he blocks somebody, then I become a blitzer. I go for Josh Allen. If he's blocking, I'm going to block. I'm going to go after Josh, you know, that kind of thing. All of that's a possibility. I think that's where Cincinnati's focus is going to be. It's going to be on the pocket where Josh is throwing it from rather than worrying too much about the secondary. I think for them, it's Diggs and a bunch of guys. I think that's the way
how the Bengals see
it. I think that's the way other teams see this offense.
Gotcha. Jess in the mailbag asks, do you think Jordan Poyer will return to Buffalo next year? Yeah, his contract's up. I think he turns 32 years old this calendar year. There have been injuries, but he is a productive player. I don't know if you can rule it out, but knowing the free agent dollars are probably going to Tremaine Edmonds, who at age 25 is just entering the prime of his career and is coming off a monster season. I don't know. It's possible. Maybe he agrees to come back on a one-year deal, just to maybe take another run at everything. You know, with Micah Hyde next year, I don't know. But a long-term fat contract, I just don't think it's good business for any football team to do that with a 32-year-old player.
I think
unless it's a quarterback.
If a deal doesn't get done, I think coming back here and Jordan Poyer playing here next year, it's going to be 100% up to Jordan Poyer.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind that the Bills will make him an offer of some sort. What kind of offer that is, who knows, whether it's a one-year or a two-year or what the numbers are going to be, whether they're going to be significantly less than maybe a free agent contract that he might land with somebody else. But you're right, 32 years old, a little bit of an injury-riddled season. How willing are teams going to be to roll out the red carpet for him? And what the difference between that red carpet would be and whatever offer the Bills would offer, because there's no doubt the Bills want him.
But like you said,
there are mitigating circumstances.
They'll make him an offer, and they'll talk him through it and why they've offered it to him, and he'll understand it, and whether he thinks he can get more, which he probably will someplace. It'll be whether he wants to be here more than he wants to go someplace else and start from scratch. So it will totally be 100% up to Jordan Poyer to consider the offer the Bills are going to make, whatever that may be.
Yeah. And that's how Brandon Bean usually approaches the offseason. He says, hey, this is what we think your value is to us. If you can do – this is what we can afford based on some of the other considerations we have. If that's good for you, then let's talk – let's get down to business. If not, and you want to see if you can make more money to do right by your family, by all means. And if you can get it, good for you.
Right.
They've done that with other players in the past who have gone elsewhere. Jennifer – from the Friday mailbag asks, which receivers do you think will be on the roster for the game Sunday? Will they dress six?
Oof.
I think it's a possibility, but I'm not convinced it will happen. I think it's going to largely be based on the game plan and the matchups that they where they feel they have advantages. If they think John Brown is a better option than Isaiah McKenzie, well, then John Brown's going to be up. You know, I was saying this morning on the Howard and Jeremy show here in Buffalo on WGR, I wonder if it's down to McKenzie and John Brown as to who's up and who's down. Because I think Beasley and Shakir gave you enough last week to convince you to keep them in the lineup. Didn't they?
Yeah, here's the thing. If it's Diggs, Davis, McKenzie, you could still activate Beasley, Shakir, and Brown, and that's six.
Right, but now you're pulling from somewhere else.
And if you take... And then you got to sit somebody, whether it's
probably a special teamer.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe if it's is it going to be Tywan Jones?
I don't know.
Is it going to be? Yeah. Or do you go? You'll have eight. You got to have eight offensive linemen.
I don't know if they dress six. They haven't all year, so it's probably five. And if it is, I think you're making a choice between John Brown and Isaiah McKenzie. And if you need somebody to at least threaten to take the top off of defense and you want to move Diggs around, like in the slot, and work the underneath the intermediate areas with him, then you may need John Brown to kind of clear out space.
Right.
And force defenses to respect you deep.
You might make a choice between Cole Beasley and Shakir, and then work Hines into that because he's fast enough to take the lid off. Although he's
so not, could Hines do what McKenzie does?
Right, exactly. Maybe a gadget guy or whatever. Or Cook,
Because I think, not for nothing, but I think Beasley and Shakir showed you they can contribute, especially when that defense puts all its focus on Diggs. And what have we been saying all week? Josh needs more of the easy button completions, yeah. And Beasley and Shakir provide that.
Do Beasley and Shakir outweigh McKenzie's speed? I think, or are they more dependable at this point? I don't know.
That's what they're going to have to weigh out.
I don't know. It's five or six, I would say.
I don't know. I just don't feel like it's going to be six. I could be wrong, but we'll find out on Sunday when the inactives come out. Joe asks, with the unpredictability of the offense late this season, should the Bills do less gunslinging and rely on the D to make the difference? Bengals O-line is down three starters, with the offense using more of their emerging running game. You're going to have to score points to win this game. So relying on your defense and trying to win 20-16, that's just not the way you're going to win in the playoffs. It's just you're not. Just ask Tennessee how the playoffs have gone the last few years, trying to take a conservative offensive approach. And Baltimore. They're at home.
Folks, that ship has sailed. I get it.
You can't play that way anymore.
I get it. You want to run the ball. And I get it, too, because when you run the ball and you can run it really well and get first down stuff, the other team looks defenseless.
Yeah.
I mean, you just muscle your way through. We're going to run the ball and win. We're going to do it. You seem defenseless, and that's always a great place to be for a fan. It's just not – no. It's not more – less gunslinging, less deep ball, okay. Take some easy, more efficient in the passing game, certainly, sure. I can get there and let the big plays happen organically instead of trying to manufacture them.
Yeah.
But, no. You run the ball if you can. Run it in spots where you think you're able to.
But man, this is a game where you got to throw the football and score points to win. I don't think there's any two ways about it. Certainly, you need to stress higher percentage throws in a game like this. If the Bills don't turn it over in the passing game, they're virtually unbeatable. They're unbelievably difficult to win against because their defense is solid, more than solid.
It's a top 10 defense.
It's a top 10 defense, top 5 defense, top 3 defense in a lot of important categories. They're hard to move the football against. So if the Bills' offense goes out and plays well and doesn't turn it over and give them short fields and stuff like that, they're really hard to get up on and beat. Yeah. You just can't do it. So all of the things you said, yeah, it sounds all well and good, but your defense ain't going to beat a team like Cincinnati, you know, to the point where you don't have to score points.
Yeah,
you may hold Cincinnati, make them go the long way, maybe make them punt, you know, a few times.
But
maybe
you better score
right,
yourself.
But you got to score.
Yeah,
you got to score.
We have to take a break here. Some final thoughts from the OBL Friday fan mailbag next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Timmy from the OBL Friday Fan Mailbag asks, who are your X factors for both offense and defense for the Bills in this game? Go.
Gabe Davis on offense and Boogie Basham on defense.
Woo! That's a little out of the – yeah. I'm going to go Kair Elam on defense. No, I'm going to switch that. Greg Rousseau on defense, and I'll tell you why in a second. On offense, I don't know what it is, but I think the Beasley connection has been reignited. I see him getting a lot of easy button throws for Josh in this one, so I think he could be pretty active. The reason I picked Rousseau, Joe Burrow leads the league in batted passes, 20 on the season, and we know that Groot has a long wingspan.
Batted
I really want them to kick him down inside a lot just to get his hands up so he just shuts off the middle of the field. He doesn't even have to get to Burrow. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get it. All sounds good when we're sitting here chit-chatting about it.
Well, the Ravens used Odafe Owe.
Yeah.
Or Odafe Owe. I don't know where the accent on which syllable is, so forgive me. But Owe, he's a 6'4", 6'5 guy, and they kicked him down inside, and he was causing all kinds of problems for that O-line for Cincinnati. So we got a guy that's even taller than that. So
right.
Throw
couple
him down
of them,
in
yeah.
there.
So, yeah, I'm with you. We'll see. The Bills must make hay against a hobbled Cincinnati offensive line. That's a critical component to this game. How much they can force Cincinnati to get out of their comfort zone in their offensive play calling because they can't protect as they want to, I think it's huge in this game. They have not been able to run the football effectively for a long time.
Yeah.
And they've got to take advantage of that. They can't let them get that on track. And they've got to get to Joe Burrow fast with as few people as possible. We'll see. I mean, that's what it's going to take.
It's going to be a big one. This is what they call a biggin'. It's a titanic tilt of a game. I know it's playoffs to begin with, but just the fact that you got these two young QBs going at it for the first time, technically,
yeah.
Because that game didn't count 3 weeks ago.
I'll see you Sunday.
It's pretty – yeah. We will see you Sunday. And then Steve and I will see you on Monday at noon. Enjoy the game.